What if you had the chance to interview the head of all operations at Disney World? The guy who led Disney World for decades, for 15 plus years, who created their entire leadership program for 7,000 cast members, and who's been intricate in just creating that magical experience that we all experience at Disney World. Well, we had a chance to interview that person on this episode of the CareCast. But in addition, this is why I'm so excited, guys and gals. In addition, I also had a chance to bring on this same exact episode that you're about to listen to, the CEO of a company here based in Oregon, but they're growing massively. They're over $300 million a year in revenue now, and they're the nation's largest drive-through coffee company called Dutch Bros. And Dutch Bros has one of the best company cultures that I've experienced, and that's one of the things that's massively fueling their growth. There's a bajillion drive-through coffee companies, drive-through coffee stands all over the country, a lot on the West Coast. But for some reason, when you're driving down the street and you see a Dutch Bros, you always see a full line on both sides of the Dutch Bros building. So something is just driving people into Dutch Bros in droves versus their competitors. You go to the competitors and see what their lines look like, and they might have one or two cars there. Dutch Bros is always packed. And it's the product is great, but the culture is really what drives this growth, what really drives people coming back for more, what really drives people loving this brand, loving to work there. Really, you know, having aspirations to work at Dutch Bros, and having aspirations to grow within the Dutch Bros organization the same way that people do at Disney, where people really admire Disney for its culture, for working at Disney, the opportunities you have, the feeling of delivering that magic that we all experience there, but also us as customers. You can totally tell that Disney thinks about the details. So that's what we're talking about in this episode of the CareCast. And I don't care if you're a one person shop, if you have 2,000 employees, this is an episode that I think you're going to get some things from that are going to completely change the way you look at growing your business. And we found here at Carrot too. You know, I've had previous businesses where they're great businesses, but we just didn't really nail culture, and happiness and fulfillment wasn't there for me as much as it is with Carrot. And we didn't have this passionate employee base and customer base that just it raves about working here, raves about being clients of ours, because we've been really, really intentional with building a great culture. It's really one of our core missions in this business, is to create such a great culture that attracts amazing leaders, that we can amplify those leaders within this organization to do more of what makes their heart sing, to make their bigger impact. And we also want to really elevate in this industry, in every industry we touch, we want to elevate what you guys, what our customers expect of companies that you work with. We want you to go out there and take the experience you have with Carrot and take that expectation and raise the bar with other companies you work with in this industry. Okay. Cause we just really feel that providing amazing experiences isn't something that only certain companies can do. It's something you make a choice to do. And we talk about how Dutch Bros and how Disney, two of the organizations I admire the most when it comes to company culture, when it comes to fostering amazingly passionate employees and clients, and when it really comes to building massive mission and purpose into your business, they're the two that pop up the top in my mind that I really wanted to learn from. And I was so fortunate to get the CEO, Travis Boyersma, the CEO of Dutch Bros, on this episode of the CareCast, along with Lee Cockrell, the head of all Disney operations for about 15 years, diving in with me and my brother Kyle on company culture and how to create really a culture of wow for your clients and your prospects, all right, and your employees. So we're going to dive in now, guys and girls. Take notes and take what you learned here and implement it in your one-person shop and implement it in your 100-person shop, whatever it is. Take these and build an amazing company that means something. All right, let's dive in. Hey guys and gals, this is Trevor Mock along with my younger brother Kyle Mock. I'm calling in from Roseburg, Oregon. Kyle's calling in from Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm insanely excited about this episode of Success at Success. Now, we've had some amazing people come on this podcast in the past, from, you know, Olympians, Ashton Eaton, Lewis Howes, an amazing podcaster, professional baseball players, the whole thing. So I'm really excited to bring it on the business side, because Kyle is deep into the athletic world, I'm deep into the entrepreneurship world. And one thing I'm really passionate about is creating a business of passion, of purpose. I know those are cliche things, but I love it. And also just really finding ways that we can create an amazing culture for our team members and have that exude out there to the public. Because just in the few years we built Carrot, the software company, it's been one of the most rewarding things that I've experienced building a company like this. But I know we have a long way to go. And so I went out there and started to look at other people that I wanted to learn from on creating amazing cultures, amazing customer experiences, building mission and purpose into these businesses that isn't really the direct product you're selling. The two businesses I immediately thought of are Disney, and then here locally on the West Coast is Dutch Brothers. And it's a company that, if you guys are listening to this from the East Coast, you might not have heard of Dutch Brothers yet, but be looking out for it, I'm sure, in the next several years, because you're probably going to be hearing about it. And of course, everyone's heard about Disney. And so I'm insanely happy to have two amazing leaders on this episode of the Success at Success. Travis, who's the CEO. And Travis, I might be butchering your last name, man. Is it Boersma?
It's Boersma, yeah.
You perfect, got it. Dude. I got it. So Travis Boersma, the CEO and co-founder of Dutch Brothers. We'll introduce you to him more here in a second. And we have Lee Cockrell, who was the former head of all of Disney World operations for about a decade, in addition to some other amazing things. So I want to welcome you guys both on the call, first of all, and just say hey.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Great to be here. It's an honor.
Excellent. So we'll start with some short introductions. Like I said, I just want to dig right into the meat. And Travis, I know you're in Oregon. You're about an hour south of where I'm standing right now in Grants Pass. What does your current business look like with Dutch Brothers? How many people are on the team and kind of where you at?
Well, we're the Dutch Bros is the largest privately held drive-through coffee company in the U.S. today with 270 outlets, roughly 7,000 employees company-wide, top to bottom. We started with just a little push cart right here in Grants Pass in 1992. Mm-hmm. So we've got some lofty goals ahead, some big dreams and aspirations, and I feel like we're just getting started.
I love it. And we're going to dig back into how you guys got to that point, because, of course, I think saying that you guys are just a coffee cart, you know, drive-through coffee cart is a vast underestimation. Also not even a real description of why you guys have grown to that point. So we're going to dig into that. And Lee, so where do you call home right now? What does your career look like? Cause I know you've retired from Disney, but you're doing a lot of stuff. You're authoring books, things like that. What's life look like for you right now? And, where'd you come from?
Yeah, well, I live in Orlando, of course, and that's the main reason I'm here, to protect my grandchildren from their parents. So they're still here, and I started out in Oklahoma, grew up there on a little farm, and I would tell everybody I was the most likely not to succeed. When I made a C, my mother baked a cake, and we had a big celebration. So, but she was married five times. I tell everyone I got adopted twice, got my name Cockrell when I was 16, went to college because husband number four had money, but I didn't study or go to class. So I flunked out and went in the Army in 1964, got out of the Army, went to work for Hilton Hotels in Washington, up there at the Connecticut Avenue where John Hinckley shot President Reagan, that hotel. And I just started there, and I got into a master's, and I joined Marriott, worked for them 17 years in Paris. And then I came back to Orlando in 93. Iterations here. So that was quick career.
Excellent. And there was a little bit of audio cutting out. I think it might have been on your end, Lee, but we'll work through. I could hear you there at the end. So hopefully it was just a little intermittent thing.
Okay.
Yeah, but so here's how I want to kind of start this. And like I said, I want to make it a free, open conversation. So Travis, if you have questions for Lee, throw them at him here in a second, vice versa with Lee. But one of the reasons, like I said, that I was really excited to have you guys on here is because I've seen so much in the business world, myself included, my previous businesses, where we start a business, we have a product, you base your business off of the product, which is the product most people are buying. It could be coffee, it could be, you know, rides, things like that. But the companies that seem like they're insanely successful and build amazing followings, they sell something besides, like the actual thing that they're selling is something different. And Travis, I was reading in an article where you were talking about what your product actually is, right? You said the mindset of our service is quality and the product is love. Love is the product. I don't know of any other company that love is their product. Dude, at what point in your business did you guys make that transition from selling coffee as a mindset to selling love? Or was there a transition? Did it start that way?
Well, you know, in the very early days, my brother Dane, being my business partner, my brother, my mentor, and my best friend, he was a people person. And to say the least, he was so magnetic and charismatic in his personality. And his love of people, my love of people, when we started with just that little push cart, was there from the very beginning. Certainly I had more of a mindset of, you know, this, we need to build this business and, you know, we're selling coffee and we're selling, you know, smoothies and whatnot. And, you know, the products that we carry are what people want. And we were focused on quality, speed and service from the very beginning. But, I think as we grew the company and as we became larger over time, the challenges and problems that we faced and the things that we learned through those problems and challenges, with our love of people being something that was very much an important ingredient, that became very obvious probably, you know, well into the business, probably 15 years or so into the business. Mm-hmm. You know, we realized that, gosh, we're not really in the coffee business. We're in the relationship business.
Yeah. Yep. And dude, one really good example that it was in the news here this past year. I think it was in one of your stands up in Washington. And, I mean, it was all over the news, all over the TV. And a gal drove up there who was a daily customer, as is my wife, a daily customer of your guys's. And I know, Clayton, your nephew, I know him well here. So there's a cool connection there, but, she was driving up to the coffee stand and I think her husband had passed away very recently. And can you tell us briefly the rest of that story and kind of how that really showed through your culture, the love that you guys are providing for your clients?
Well, you know, we've got so many unbelievable people in our organization, and we empower our people to do the right thing. And you know, it says guarantee to satisfy on the bottom of every cup. And what that means is, you know, we're going to make it right and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that our customers go away with a smile. Mm-hmm. and they get the order that they wanted. This thing that happened up in Vancouver, Washington, believe it or not, I think there's quite a common occurrence of these touches that happen with the people that we encounter day in and day out. You know, you learn their names, you know their drinks, you have them ready when they pull up, and you learn about them, you form these relationships with them, and you know, there's a reciprocal exchange that I think is so deep over time. And so this one lady had come through, she had lost her husband, and as a customer that had come through, you know, our people were working, they simply you know, touched base with her on the day, what's happening, how things, and you could just tell she was emotionally distraught and she'd lost her husband. And they just kind of rallied together and leaned out the window and said, you know, is it okay if we say a prayer? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, yeah, that would be amazing. And so they, you know, united hands collectively, our broistas that were working, and they reached out into the window of her car and her, you know, reaching out, and just by accident, the customer behind her in her car was videotaping this episode of this prayer and posted it on social media, and it went viral. It absolutely just went wild. And I believe last count, there was like, I don't know, 65 million views of the video. And then the flood of comments and the stories that were exchanged with other people's experiences with their local BB and maybe things that they had gone through, or, you know, the conversation in the context of religion and all that, you know, everyone was so supportive. There was such positive energy behind it, and it really didn't matter what your faith was or what your beliefs were. It was just a humanitarian effort that really was extraordinary.
I love it, man. Wow. And we want to touch more on that on the culture side here in a bit. And I want to pass this over to you, Lee, because, you know, being at Disney for so long and also with Marriott and Hilton, you wrote many books with the word magic in it. And that's the first thing that really comes to my mind when I think of Disney or Disney World is literally you walk in there and it's magic. And anytime I'm at a different place where you experience little bits of that magic, you could be walking in a great hotel and you just kind of feel the ambiance of something. The first thing that pops in my mind is like, man, that's got like the magic of Disney. How did you guys intentionally build that magic into that experience? Now, Travis kind of talked about a little bit there, but how intentional is it? Is it coming from the person that you hired because they're a great quality person? Kind of where's that magic come from?
Well, I'd say we do it pretty much like Travis does it. We hire better than most people. We are very careful who we bring on to the organization. And even today, if you want to work at Disney on a frontline position, you have to go on the internet and answer 136 questions about yourself. We want to know who you are. Mm-hmm. We want to know if you have high energy, stamina. Are you going to be polite? Are you going to be to work on time? And we worked with Gallup on that and kind of clears out the field. And if you get through that, you got to go over to the casting center and fill out an application. And, you know, we have 73,000 people working in Orlando now. Mm-hmm. And watch a film before you fill out the application. It lays out clearly the expectations for working at Disney, from being on time to personal appearance to grooming guidelines to all the things that you want to tell people for about 15 minutes. And then at the end of that film, about 25% of the people decide they don't want to work for Disney after they hear that. And that's good, because we want people who are going to be nice all day long, not just occasionally. Mm-hmm. And so we really do hire for good attitude. And we do, second thing we do better than most people, we do great training. I'm sure Travis does too. Training. We test people after the training, and then we make sure management all understands. We all enforce the training, because even Bill Marriott told me years ago, the only way you get excellence is training and education, and then you got to enforce it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's right. And adds selecting great people to that, you're off to the ball game. And last, our culture. We really focus on a culture where our goal is to make everybody wake up in the morning and want to come to work versus have to come. Mm-hmm. And for the paycheck. And second, a place where everybody matters and they know they matter. And we really work hard with our leadership to make sure that we don't miss opportunities to make sure people matter at whatever level they are, and make sure they're respected and included and involved and listened to, their opinion counts, those kinds of things, which are, as Travis knows, just as part of the culture. It becomes your culture. It's who you are. It's not what you do, but who we are. And you know, anybody can build a theme park or attractions or hotels. And as Travis said, the people are, they really, our people are our brand. We know that. We get thousands of letters a year, and it's all about the cast members, what a great job they do and how nice they are and how they stepped over and helped somebody or pay attention to their children or a person was disabled. Same kind of stuff. And we don't have policies for taking care of guests. We just allow it. Mm. So, like this, saying this prayer to that lady, that was allowed. They didn't have to go look in a rule book, see if you can do that. And we don't either. We give a lot of authority to the frontline cast, both financially and hopefully through training and picking the right people, that they will make good, solid, common sense decisions for the guest. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our model. Hire, train, and have a good culture, and it goes pretty well.
Dude, Travis, I'm gonna kind of put you on the spot here, Travis. So I know you guys study Disney a lot. And Daniel Jeremiah, who, of course, works with you guys, I'm good friends with him. And I was wanting to get you on a podcast, and Daniel said, man, we really follow Disney a lot. I go, shoot, I really love Disney too. I think one of the best ways I can get Travis on a podcast is also get one amazing leader from Disney on the podcast, and we can kind of rap about it. So if you had one or two questions to ask Lee, you know, just being in the position that he was in and still is in with, you know, with his knowledge set and his career, dude, what would you ask Lee?
Well, man, first of all, Lee, I had the great opportunity of listening to you on Entree Leadership, and it was an amazing podcast, and it's one that I listen to religiously, And we have these committee meetings with our franchise owners that we get together, and I played your podcast to everybody there because I thought it was extraordinary and special, and it took a nice dive into culture. And you know, for us, our culture is the differentiator. It's the thing that keeps our business unique and special. And one of the things that I guess I'm curious about with the high standard that you have with all of your people and in your leadership specifically, you know, how do you really measure someone's performance that is in leadership specifically, and what, you know, how do you, you know, how do you coach them up, and how often do you coach them up? And then, you know, what is that fine line where, you know, they need to either start a new beginning and move on, or, you know, they grow and learn and from challenges or mistakes they made and become a better version of themselves and stay in a capacity where they can lead.
Yeah, well, we went through this about in the mid-90s. We were not happy with we heard the competition coming. The internet had arrived. Anybody could go on any site and find a vacation, and you couldn't control the commercials anymore because anybody could get up a site. They didn't have to go on TV and pay all that money. And so we refocused, and we said that really the customer does not come first. Leadership does, and until we get leaders in every position that are better and better dealing with people, that we're not going to be able to get the frontline cast to perform. So I would say our model today, and we went through that, about 50 executives left the company because we laid it out that it's going to be different going down the road. You're going to have to listen to your people. You're going to have to involve them. You're going to have to respect them. You can't no longer intimidate and kind of push people around. And I would say after that, we got a lot of systems in place where we each time there was an opening, we hired better. We got better. We got smarter at how to interview, how to do background checks, how to make sure that we were totally clear with the managers on our expectations for their technical ability, their management skills, and their leadership. All three are important. And then we have an annual survey that's anonymous for each leader, gets a survey from all their people about would you work for your leader again if you had the choice? Questions like that. Do you have the resources you need? How do you feel about working for Disney? We get a good reading on every manager. And I would say we have a pretty open – every executive at Disney has a confidential voicemail that any cast member can leave a message on. I had – my name was posted all over the property, as all the executives are, and you don't have to leave your name if you want to tell us somebody's misbehaving or stealing or taking – not treating you right or sexual harassment, because we want to make sure they call us and let us take care of it so they don't call the newspaper or get a lawyer or file a class action suit. Mm-hmm. So I got messages every morning. Sometimes they'd leave their name. A lot of times they wouldn't because they didn't want to get involved. But we always followed up. We got HR and compliance involved. They went over there and checked it out, and they knew we dealt with it. So we had a lot of ways. We were very open. We had a rule. You can go see anybody you want. If you don't think you're getting – you know, if you want to come see Lee Cockrell, you'll get in. You'll see him. We'll get somebody over there to see you. And people say, how do you do that with 70,000 people? I said, the problem was most people don't take you up on it, but they know it's available. And all of our managers are pretty – we have a rule. A manager has to be out in the operation 80% of the day. They can't be in the office. We changed the titles to guest service manager to make sure they understood where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
I said, if your name is Chef, you should be near a stove. If you're an office manager, go to the office. If you're a guest service, be with the guests. And it really made a difference in how we monitor and pay attention and really supervise and coach people along. And we have a very good onboarding. It's a full day of onboarding about the company, the culture, the expectations, how our purpose in life is to make sure every guest has a spectacular visit by every cast member that comes into contact with them, and even the ones who don't. The backstage people have to know how they do their job impacts the front line. And so we kind of tie all that together. If you want anything, you send me an email. I got a lot of stuff I put together about how we do it at Disney. I'll send it to you.
That'd be fantastic. I'd love to do that. I know that the toughest part that I find is when you've got somebody who does have all the potential in the world. They earn the position that they over time of stepping into that leadership role. And then, you know, you find out through feedback surveys that, you know, their ego has maybe got inflated and they're a big bad boss, you know, but they really, you know, I mean, they kind of sit in that place of, well, you know, they do all the job well, they have all the potential in the world. And then, you know, I'm curious, you know, the feedback and the coaching and the how much rope do you give those folks?
Well, we have a very clear system, and if you start, you know, your boss may have one or two conversations with you, and then they will put it into a document we call, we used it was Disney Great Leader Strategies, and I can send you a copy of that, and we document why we're not happy. And we don't want to just say you're not doing your job. We give them real live examples. The way you spoke to Mary in that meeting last week, you've been late three times this week, you didn't get that report in on time. So we give them a lot. We may take 2 or 3 weeks to develop that. And then we put them on either 60 or 90 day probation. We meet with them every week. If they make progress, we'll extend it. If they don't, they're gone at the end of 90 days. And it's up to them. And we call those good people who don't fit in anymore. You know, they may have a family and they're good people and they go to church, but they're not doing their job. And that's how we think about it. And we think it's unfair to the other employees and the other managers if we got somebody like that. And you're right. Ego is the problem. Egotistical, becoming egotistical and not understanding that only way Disney works is everybody doing what they're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. I don't even think you could write a book on how it runs, because nobody knows. It just works, and it works out of relationships, and it works
That's
out
right.
of trust.
Yeah.
And we help each other. And as my boss always said, if I ever find out there's any silos around here, I'm going to blow them up. So we all knew. It's kind of like my mother. She used to say, "Be nice or else." So we say Disney's the happiest place on earth, or else. So that's how.
Or else it's not.
It's just a whole system, you know. It's just it becomes who you are. It's like a family. Families that where the family's happy and the kids feel safe, and that's a there's no bigotry and there's no racism, and those are things that happen where there's a good leader, either a father and mother or at work. And we don't put up with any of this bigotry and talk and about other people. We don't care what your religion is or your sexual orientation or your age or your gender. All we care about is performance. And that's all our managers are going to judge is performance. It's none of your business what religion they practice. It's none of your business if they're gay or not. It's none of your business. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Your job is focus on prevention, on the talent, on being good performers. That's all we need. Performance.
So
I hammer that a lot. Performance is what we're there for.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I've got something I want to throw out there. I know Travis, you guys with Dutch Bros, just in recent years, I mean, I don't know exactly when you guys kind of switched your franchise model from, I think at the start, someone could buy a franchise. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but now all of your franchise owners come from your staff, from people who have worked at a stand for X amount of time. And you guys are really innovating on how someone buys a franchise now. I've never heard of that model as far as, you guys are financing the franchise for them. How much do you think it's changed your organization, switching to that model where you cannot own a Dutch Brothers franchise unless you worked at Dutch Brothers for X amount of time versus how it was before?
Well, you know, just kind of rewinding the clock, when we were franchising and we were selling the business as a franchise business to people maybe that had business experience and brought great value. The culture being the differentiator, and the realization that it wasn't that easy to teach the culture. It wasn't something that, you know, you could just hand over in a binder and have somebody read and man, you know, they got it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the learning curve with the culture in what we were doing with, you know, the business being much to a big degree, you know, the relationship business.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that we made a shift in 2008. We said, you know, gosh, we're going to grow with people in our organization and provide opportunities for people in the organization. And, you know, with that, you know, they can earn these franchises. You know, they're not necessarily, we're not really interested in selling franchises today at all. We're interested in people that are exemplary with the culture, that have operational know-how and have demonstrated that over time, and have leadership characteristics and skill sets that are really strong and have proven themselves to be what we want them to be as far as the standard of Dutch Bros goes going forward. So, you know, making the shift from selling franchises and modeling other franchise companies. I mean, typically you'd see a Subway that's a franchise or a McDonald's that's a franchise, and they have a system and a structure that is very stringent. And while that model works well for those organizations, the culture being the differentiator for us in a relationship business, we really made the tweak to grow organically, grow with our own people exclusively, and then, you know, trying to figure out how to create a barrier to entry that was reasonable is one of the recent shifts that we made over the last couple of years is, you know, financing the projects and having a strategic growth plan to grow into different markets that is achievable for people to have the opportunity.
So I know you guys have kind of modeled a little bit of the In-N-Out Burger expansion, you know, controlled expansion plan. And I would even venture to say on the Disney side, I know Lee, you're probably an insanely massive student of Disney and Disney history, I'm sure, especially way before you even got there. And Disney kind of did a little bit of a controlled expansion too. It started in California, of course, then Florida, then it started to branch out. And you were brought in, I think I heard on a podcast, into helped start the Paris Disney, correct?
That's correct, right.
So yeah. So how much did this kind of controlled expansion, where you guys probably could have grown a lot faster and just started throwing up theme parks everywhere, how much does that controlled expansion really played into making sure you guys retained that magic and that culture that the Disney organization is known for?
Well, we made some few errors in France. I mean, yeah, we didn't really understand the culture deep enough. And I tell you, that's one thing, even for Dutch Brothers, is to, even when you go into a different state or a different city, and a small city versus a big city, cultures are really different. And we got open. We had to change all the menus 2 weeks after opening. We had too much American food on there. We weren't serving wine, which in France, if you don't serve wine and a baguette, you'll be run out of the country probably by noon. So we changed all that. We had the pricing wrong in the hotels. We didn't listen to our own research. And, you know, it's the same old story. We were too arrogant, but I would say culture's everything. And even one company I think of it when you talk about limited expansion over around here, which I didn't even know about a few years ago, is Chick-fil-A. They are very involved too in making sure they got the right people. You walk in one of those, the people are so nice and so clean cut and looking good and taking care of business. It's amazing. And so they do it because they want to. But I would say now, yeah, Disney mainly is going to expand. We don't want to expand so much that the people from Europe don't come to Disneyland anymore, or Disney World, or the Chinese don't come to California. That's probably why there'll never be one in South America. Well, we get them all up here in Florida, and they like to come. It's a vacation. And so you got to be careful. But, yeah, I think we're pretty careful, and I think we learned a lesson. We opened Hong Kong much better. We hired a lot of Chinese and trained them to run the place and then put them in charge. Now we have French managers, and they've learned the business, and they know how it works here, so it's getting better. And then Shanghai, same, and Japan also. Japanese always did a great job. They are very service-oriented. And so, yeah, I think that's right. And we're controlled because when it costs $5 billion to build a park, that kind of controls it.
It helps control
well,
it for you.
There's tremendous wisdom in what you're saying too, Lee, with you know, making the problem, you know, having these problems and challenges or mistakes that you make along the course of the walk. I mean, those are opportunities to learn from and benefit from. I mean, those are, you know, the objective is to find the seedling of the equivalent advantage when you encounter a problem in our world. And, and you know, that's how you get better and that's how you improve. And to think that you could go into a market and just do it perfect is unrealistic. You know, you got to do your homework and you got to be able to be nimble. And Chick-fil-A is one heck of an example of a company that does it on a large scale. And we cross-pollinate ideas from all sorts of different organizations. I mean, you know, we've got more information at our fingertips than anybody in history to use, and there's models with anything that you want. You want financial freedom, you can go figure out a way to get there. If you want passionate relationships, there's people that have done it in extraordinary ways that you can benefit from, and there's models everywhere and a ton of history to draw from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was telling somebody the other day, if you don't understand something, you have no excuse today. Yeah. There's enough out there. You Google or the internet, people who will help you, who will talk to you. If you don't know something, that's your own fault.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I want to shift this a little bit toward mentors, and we've got a little bit of time left here. And Lee, I listened to that same Entree Leadership podcast, and that's how I first got introduced to you. And I was going after that. I'm like, I'm going to dig into everything Lee's got here, because I really love the way that you present it, but also your experience. And one of the stories you told really hit me, and I can't remember if it was at Hilton or Marriott, but your boss, it might have even been the head cheese there, said, "Hey, go out front and, you know, clean that postal box." And yeah. Would you mind telling that story a little bit? And then I want to kind of dig into attention to detail in both of your guys' cultures and how important that is, or is that not as important?
Well, I can tell you, I was the general manager of the Marriott in Springfield, Massachusetts, and Mr. Marriott came to visit us, and everything was fine. We were all cleaned up and ready to go inside. The place looked good, and we always kept it looking good, because I don't like that idea of clean up for the boss coming. It mm-hmm. seems kind of not right. It sounds like we're manipulating the situation. I never want to think that we're trying to fool somebody. But then after the visit, Mr. Marriott said, "Lee, you got to keep that blue mailbox out there in front of the hotel clean." I said, "Well, Ms. Barrett, that's not our mailbox. It's the government." He said, "I know, but it's next to our hotel." Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you another. His dad came in when I was running a restaurant in Philadelphia. His dad is big 6'4", the founder of the company. And he walked up to me. 1970s. I had long hair over my ears. He reached up and took a hold.
Oh, we lost him. See if you can get him back. We'll keep it rolling, man. We'll keep it rolling. Anyway, so hopefully we'll be able to get Lee back here, guys and gals. Got cut off there midstream. But Travis, I'm going to dig into a couple things with you, man. And first of all, once again, dude, really appreciate. Oh, he's back. You back with us?
I don't know what happened. It just blinked off.
You're back. So the last thing I heard was long hair. Grab it.
Okay, so I was just saying his dad kind of set the pace. You know, it all starts at the top. So yeah. Bill became a great president because his dad was great. I mean, his father sent him to San Francisco back in the 20s to sell 2,000 sheep from Utah when he was 14 years old. Hmm. You talk about developing leadership and responsibility.
Wow.
And he walked into my restaurant one day in the 70s, and I had long hair over my ears, and Mr. Marriott, he was not bashful. He walked up to me and he looked at my name tag and he said, "Cockrell, are you the manager here?" I said, "Yes, sir." He reached up and took a hold of my hair and said, "Why don't you get a haircut and look like you're the manager?" That's the last time I had long hair. And after I recovered from the heart attack, I understood what he meant. Look like you're somebody. Mm-hmm. And those were great lessons to work for people like that. And I'm sure in the Dutch Brothers, too. It's all role modeling. You got to tell them what you want, show them what you want, and walk the talk, and let people look at it. Doesn't matter how tough you are or how high your standards are, people are happy to step up if we're just more clear what we want. And half the time, managers don't tell people what they want, and then they don't walk the talk, and then they, are not doing what they should do. And so, I think role modeling is probably one of the best training methods in the world.
No doubt about it. I can't agree with you more. In our world, with what we do, we've got so many young people that are highly motivated that want to go kick ass and take on the world and live large, right? And the fact of the matter is they're told often you need to have a mentor, go find a mentor. And I think there's so much confusion with that. I think it's more simple than what one would think. Bottom line is we really emulate people that showcase great skills naturally. That's yeah. what we do. I mean, when you see somebody, it's not the person who's telling you everything. It's the person who's showing you everything that you really are drawn to,
Absolutely.
And with our, when we hire somebody and you start as a broista, I mean, you're like a deer in the headlights. You got all these different combinations and drinks and recipes and pricing and all this stuff. And people are, you're watching people around you who are seasoned veterans and they're comfortable, they're confident, they're competent, and they can carry on a conversation and build coffee faster than you and I can blink our eyes and they're dealing with the line and the pressure seems immense and the music's rocking, but they got a handle on the situation and that newbie's sitting there going, "Man, please help." You know, I mean, how am I going to figure out a way to do all this stuff? And repetition's a mother's skill. It takes a little time, but they always have somebody that can showcase. And before you know it, they end up being that same person. And in their mentoring, they don't even know it. It's not necessarily going to breakfast every Tuesday at 8 o'clock and somebody telling you how to live your life. Yeah. It's really walking it every day and showcasing it as a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the right way. And I, you know, all these companies that try to assign mentors, I think that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. You know, if you're doing a great job and you got a great attitude, a mentor will find you, and that's where it needs to be. And I think you can give advice to anybody, but mentoring people, I think you're right. Role modeling, they're watching you, show them how to do it, show them what excellence looks like, and that's where they learn.
So one thing I want to throw out there that both Disney and Dutch Bros have done so well, and there's other companies that have done this as well too, is number one, a lot of your staff on the front lines are younger. So we're going to touch on that here in a second, but also, you know, I've got my wife's cousin actually is a Imagineer at Disney. He just joined the team about a year ago, and that was his dream literally his whole life. I remember when he went to Disney Paris, and all the way from 10, 12 years old, he was saying, "I'm going to be an Imagineer." And went to USC. Now he's an Imagineer. Dutch Bros, same thing. Where we hear a lot of times where people drive up and they're like, "Man, I want to work for Dutch Bros," right? So. Yeah. You guys attract a lot of young people, and I think a lot of it is the feeling of the growth, I think, that they're going to have there, of the impact they're going to have. And I know Travis, you mentioned this in an article I read. It said, 10 years from now, I see a healthy growth rate that is sustainable with our company that's providing young people a chance to live their dream inside or outside of Dutch Brothers. And I think both Disney and Dutch Bros do that so well, where you attract amazing people because of the lore that you guys have created, but you go, you know what? We want you to succeed outside of this company. How much of that was intentional from the start, and how much of it kind of created, you know, formed as you guys formed the companies, Disney and Dutch Bros?
Well, I can say that Disney, the main reason young people come is because of opportunity. Mm-hmm. I always tell them, you know, it's not the healthcare benefits that makes it great there. It's the opportunity. If you're good and you really do a great job, and, you know, there's a lot of competition, too, for moving up into management. But I'd say 90% of our managers are come from within. We get a good look at people. They know that they can perform there. You got to be great. So that's just the way it is. Even the president at Disney today started as a busboy in the restaurant 45 years ago. He's that's the president cool. now. And the head of marketing started driving a boat on the water there, and she was the executive vice president of marketing. And mm-hmm. this is common. My son's been there 25 years. He's the vice president of the Magic Kingdom. You know, he started in the parking lot as an hourly parking cars after he got out of college. So it's a opportunity turns people on and makes them excited, and they want to be in that kind of organization. And I'll tell you one thing, if whether you're Dutch Brothers or Disney, if you get that on your resume, you're going to get better interviews when you go out in the world, because they're going to look and they're going to talk about that, because they'll know about it, and they'll know that you've been trained, you know what you're doing, and you have the right attitude. And it serves people well to get a great company on your resume, I think.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. And with what we're doing and where we're going, I can't agree more with Lee. I mean, it's ultra competitive. With 7,000 people in the organization today, roughly, we've got, you know, only so many spots and leadership platforms and so many franchise owners that we can put out there. And, you know, ultimately it comes down to competition and performance and drive and determination, and the cream rises to the top. The extraordinary people that go the extraordinary mile, those are the ones that are going to get there. And for me, something that's so important is with the vision of the company being a compelling future or hope in community or with our people, you know, internally, maybe externally is most important for us. I mean, when you come to work in our organization, it's a part-time job. Mm-hmm. And with that job, you know, you've got, you know, all this opportunity, and you get to learn some great life lessons. You get to make some great money. You get to have some unbelievable experiences. And my hope is that those chapters in their life with working at DB is going to be some of the greatest experiences of their life. Mm-hmm. But we want to help them figure out what they want to do in their life, how they can design their life and go forward and really be a force for good in community. You know, I mean, how can we help young people design their life, live their dream, and really go make a difference in our communities, because in the big picture of things, that's what it's all about. I mean, we're only here for a short time, and while we're here for that time, we want to maximize it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and young people are our only hope, so you better get them ready.
That's right. That's right.
And yeah, that's so true. It's really true. I just wrote a new book called Career Magic, How to Stay on Track to Achieve a Stellar Career. And I wrote it for young people because I developed a program at Disney on this. I'll send it to you if you're interested, because it kind of alerts them that you're going to have many obstacles in your career. They don't go straight up. And I even put a graph of my career in there. It looks like the Dow Jones average, but it's got a good trend line, because I've been fired, passed over, you name it, I've been there. And you just got to, and hopefully to tell them that you got to learn to deal with obstacles, with customers, with profit, with sales, with recessions, all the kinds of things that can happen. And as you're picking those resilient people, I know those are the ones that rise to the top and have the ability to become a leader. Mm-hmm. And that's what we really focus on, is making sure you people, a lot of you, I worry about young people giving up when it doesn't work out just right, or by 24 they're not in the, you know, in the somewhere where they thought they would be, and their parents getting too involved and telling them they shouldn't start in your business making coffee or working at Disney in fast food. And I tell them all the time when they talk to me, I said, if your parents are okay, you got to do this. But if they're not, you'll have to decide, because they just spent $100,000 on your education and they don't like you being a hostess. But I can tell you that that's what I told my son to do. You take a job in any job at Disney and stay 5 years. If you don't like it, then you can leave. But you'll get a lot of training. You'll be in a great company and you'll see how to do it right. And then you move on. Then you'll be 27 and you got 40 more years to work, or 50 or something.
Yeah, that's right. It never stops.
Don't become famous too fast.
So we've got a few more minutes here. I want to respect your time, Lee. I know you've got a jet on a vacation, and I've got one last kind of tidbit here I want to throw out there, and then we'll tell people where they can find out about you guys and things like that. But one of the things I've enjoyed so much about this conversation, and honestly, I could talk for another hour, because there's a whole list of questions here I'm going through. It's like, man, I haven't gotten into these, but we don't have time for it. The thing that I want to make sure to get across to people listening to this episode of the Carrot Cast, is another podcast to do, Success is Success, is I know when I started my first companies, I think a lot of people start this way, is you start it to start getting some money coming in. You started to have that freedom from what you were doing before. I know, Travis, for you, you had the family dairy, and you kind of had to make a transition there. So at the start, you probably weren't going out there trying to make this big, massive impact for young people and build this amazing culture. Like, hey, this could be kind of cool to do, and it's a new business opportunity. But where I see the companies that make massive impacts, where the founders seem like they're insanely passionate and purposeful, where the employees and team are just really gung-ho for this mission, is somewhere in between the phase where you start making money, you realize, okay, we're doing fine, then you find that purpose in the organization that is not related to the direct product you sell. Like you said, Travis, you guys sell coffee as far as the physical product, but you're selling love. You're selling this amazing organization for young people to really blossom in. Disney, of course, rides things like that, but you guys are selling this magical experience that people come back to each year or every several years. And with Care, we started off with selling software. And now my mission in life, I really feel, is to amplify leaders. Cause when we find leaders out there like you guys, and we can help unshackle them from the things that hold them back, they can go do more of what makes the heart sing, and more, you know, making that bigger impact. So that's why we want to grow. So Travis, for you guys are already big business. You guys are $300 million a year business or more, or right around that. Disney, of course, is a ginormous organization that they could just say, hey, let's coast from now and let's just keep it how it is. Why do each one of you guys want to continue growing in what you're doing? Lee, you just wrote a new book. Travis, you guys are growing your organization. You guys already have the money, the revenue you want. Why do you guys want to keep growing?
Well, I'll say first, because I got to get off here in a second. But I can tell you what, retirement is very boring. And so I started my company the minute I retired, and I wrote the first book. I put up a website. I started getting customers. People wanted to know about Disney service, leadership and management and all that stuff. And I got a client that hired me for a year, and that got me started. And then I've done about, I don't know, I've probably 600 speeches and seminars and workshops, and got 4 books out now. And you know why? I think I feel good about it when people call me and say thank you. That really made us do a better job in our company. We never thought about it that way. Mm-hmm. I get those notes all the time, you know, and there's nothing. I said, you know, if I played golf in retirement, nobody would clap. When I speak, they do. And so that's mm-hmm. one reason. But I think we need more teachers like we talked about today and less bossing. Mm-hmm. Bossing people around is not going to do it. We got to teach them, got to show them, got to lead them and show them the way. And I think too many young people underestimate what they can achieve unless they're under good leadership. And then they are taught what they can achieve and they start to believe in themselves and have more security and more confidence. And that's fabulous. You know, it's like raising kids. You're so happy when they grow up and have a job, not in prison, that you're excited. I think it's the kind of the payback because people really appreciate it when you do something for them. They never forget it. You may forget it. They never forget it. And so that's how I try to focus my life now. I probably made enough people miserable back in my working days, and I'm trying to make everybody happy every day. So I'm going to buzz off. And if you all want any of this material, send me an email and I'll get it off to you.
Lee, we appreciate the heck out of you. Travis, any parting words for Lee before he jets?
Well, it was just an honor to be on the call with you, Lee, and keep doing the great work you're doing. I was just going to share, you know, you never arrive until you depart. I mean, this journey that we have in this life is very real. The struggle is real. And this is the thing. It's constant, never ending improvement. If you're successful, it's rented and the rent is due every day. Mm-hmm. You know, so. You know, change is imminent. We can adapt to change and make it, you know, better with our mindsets, our thoughts, and that leads to feelings. But, you know, Lee, you're an example of that, and I appreciate everything that you're doing. And keep on going, man, because, you know, I don't believe in retirement, man. I don't see myself retiring. I see myself, as long as I can be of great value in the organization that I am, I'm going to keep on going. You know, it's a lifelong journey.
And it'll keep you alive. So that's a good one.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You all take care. I'll be talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Lee. Have a great vacation.
Safe travels.
Bye.
Travis, stay on here for one more second, man. And guys and gals, so Lee had to jet, but head over to his website, leecockrell.com. Just Google anything that looks like that. You'll probably find his stuff, or Google his, one of his books, Creating Magic, Career Magic, Time Management Magic, The Customer Rules. So Travis, one last thing before you go, man. First of all, I want to really thank you as well. Appreciate you taking the time out. I know you're working in a fast growing company, busy as heck, and this hour is a valuable hour for you. And also, just want to thank you for being an inspiration for a lot of people in rural America. You know, that's something I'm really passionate about is staying in a small town and showing that you can build a great company in a small town. If you think innovatively and you do it a little bit different, and you do it with mission. So one thing I want to throw at you, man, is I guess the extension of that last question, but kind of what's next for you guys? And if anyone's listening to this episode of this podcast, what is a way that we can help you achieve your mission better?
Well, you know, I think as we grow collectively in our country, it takes everybody. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter who's going to be president of the United States as much as it matters what we're going to do about our role as a leader.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really boils down to, you know, self-awareness and personal accountability and really, you know, striving to be the best version of ourselves that we can be. So, you know, my ask of everybody is in a leadership capacity is to work on yourself, man. I mean, try to figure out how you can improve who you are and what you want to be. And are you really aware? You know, I mean, do you really get great feedback? Do you really have, you know, because I can tell you right now, I mean, there's times where I'm off kilter and I think I'm like spot on. And, you know, throw a video camera on yourself and, you know, see how your behaviors change. Yeah. You know, I mean, are you the same version of yourself that you'd be if the video camera's rolling?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I mean, it's a good gut check. So, with where we're going and what we're doing, you know, what's next for us is really more of the same. It's setting goals and it's really reaching for the moon. And if you miss, you'll be up with the stars, but it's making sure that we preserve our culture and cultivate it regularly with our growth and try to figure out how to better serve as leaders. You know, we want to grow our company in a way that helps people in their life, you know, to go make a difference, you know, so how do we better do that? And with those opportunities that we can create with the growth, I mean, we could have, you know, 1,000 stores in the next 10 years. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm not going to grow one of them if the culture can't be intact and rocking.
I love it. I love it. So you brought up the words constant, never-ending improvement around that. So I'm looking at our core values poster across the room, and one of our core values is constant, never-ending improvement. And you mentioned the one thing that people can do is just keep growing and learning. What are you doing right now, man, to learn and grow? Kind of what are some of your rituals?
Well, you know, I think, you know, looking out and modeling and trying to better understand how different leaders or different organizations are doing things in extraordinary fashion. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, who's out there doing things really well and how can we learn from them? Who's done it historically really well and what can we take away there? It's being a student more than a teacher. It's really absorbing information. I think that Entree Leadership podcast is something that, that I enjoy immensely because, you know, the way I look at it is I'm always panning for gold and there's gold nuggets always that you can find. Sometimes you get lucky and you run into a mainline, right? You're just like, wow, this is unbelievable. And you're consuming stuff and you're bringing it in, you're regurgitating and you're telling people about it. And then sometimes you're listening to one and you're like, man, you know, I mean, I wish that I was, you know, this isn't just hitting with me, but there's always a takeaway in books or, you know, podcasts, you know, seminars, whatever it takes to continue to expand and stretch your boundaries, your comfort zones. I think sometimes we need those things. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we got to stretch ourselves.
I love it. Kyle, anything you want to say before we jet, man? You've been quiet over there.
I think he's frozen.
I think he is frozen. Oh, well, we'll wrap it up. Well, Travis, appreciate the heck out of you on here, man. Have an amazing rest of the week. And like I said, we're going to continue being a patron of your stores here in Roseburg and elsewhere. And just really, really proud to call you a fellow Oregonian and entrepreneur. And thanks for being on the call. Kyle's back. Do you have any parting words, Kyle?
No, man. Just been soaking it all in. Very different parts of companies as far as where my business is and where Travis and Lee are. So, I mean, I'm a big culture business too, and learning kind of what Travis has been talking about with Dutch Bros has been huge. Especially knowing that some of my employees and people that I work with are all past Dutch Bros, baristas and broistas. And, actually you might know our photographer, Bubba Sellers. He was with Dutch Bros for a long time.
Right.
But, yeah, man.
Well, you know, and I'll just leave on this note with you guys. You know, I mean, I used to look at this little plaque that was on my brother-in-law's wall in his office, Brian Maxwell, who's my right-hand man in our operations, general manager of the whole company. And he used to say, God, family, work, play. Mm-hmm. And I go, man, that's the right on order. If I could keep it in that order, it'd be like so bitching.
Yeah.
And I'd always screw it up, man. I'd have play like, you know, surface up to the top. And then, you know, you always have this compromise or this challenge in one of the other areas. And so finally I looked at it and, you know, I mean, with our growth and time being the most valuable commodity that we have, you know, knowing that we don't get to know really how much of it we have, but with what we have, how do we spend it and where are we investing it? I really did something that has served me and I hope has served our organization, my family and everybody else around me is I took play over to the side and I put a big equal sign next to it and I put God, family and work and I put play in those areas, man. And it ultimately is fulfilling and it allows my cup to overflow into others' lives. And I get to go coach my kids in soccer this weekend in a tournament in Portland, man. So how lucky am I, right?
That's sweet.
I feel like I'm the luckiest guy to ever live.
I love it, dude. And that's a great spot to end. Travis, thank you, buddy. Have an amazing rest of the week. Hopefully we have a chance to meet in person. And everyone, go out there. And if you're on the West Coast, visit a Dutch Bros. Experience that culture firsthand. And if you're not on the West Coast, make a trip out here and literally visit a Dutch Bros. Because it's something that they have an amazing culture. And you guys are going to hear about Dutch Bros. On the East Coast, I think, in the next decade if you haven't already. So thank you, guys. Have an amazing rest of the weekend. We'll talk soon. Here's one thing that I really, really wish, guys and gals, I would have learned earlier that you guys got a big, big, big peek behind the scenes on in this episode of the Carrot Cast. And in the previous companies that I've ran, we've had great products, great customers, you know, great team members, but we really didn't bake in mission. We really didn't bake in purpose and passion and core values into those other businesses. You know, we were creating great products, making good money, but that's kind of where it ended for me personally anyway. And what we have found with Carrot and what these pioneers, you know, Lee Cockrell with Disney and Travis Boyers and with Dutch Bros and many other companies like them that focus so much on culture as a core differentiator and finding amazing people and attracting amazing clients, is that when you base a business off of culture, off of core values, off of real mission, where the product that you're selling, the product that you're selling to your clients, where, you know, Disney sells rides and drinks and things like that, that's the physical product they're selling. The actual product that they're selling, that people are buying, is magic, okay? Is that magical feeling. With Dutch Bros, the physical product they're selling is coffee and things like that. The actual product that people are buying is that culture, is that love, is that feeling that it's the bright spot of their day when they show up to that coffee stand, okay? What is that version in your business? Because my guess is that you, possibly you, but most entrepreneurs out there, they never get past the money-making side. They never get past the side where their business exists solely to make the sale and make the money so they can live the lifestyle they want. And I know for me, when I was in that spot in my business, in my life, the happiness wasn't there. Because, you know, the happiness wasn't there, purpose wasn't there, the passion wasn't there. It starts out being there, but it's fleeting when you focus on the dollars and you focus on just turning deals. Okay. As soon as you look at ways that you can create a business where the product you're selling and the product people are buying are two different things, and people are excited as heck about buying that product. Once again, with you guys, if you're flipping houses, the product you should be selling and that people are buying should not be real estate. It shouldn't be just investment properties. It should be something that deep down hits them at their core, like Dutch Bros does with love, like Disney does with magic. What can that magic be for you that attracts people, that makes your business mean more to you at your core, that makes you more excited about your reasons to grow that business than anything you're currently doing right now? Challenge yourself on that one, because I can promise you, as soon as you find that, you are going to be at a whole different level in life, whole different level in business, and you're going to really go out there and set the world on fire. Okay. With Carrot, we're in that phase right now, and I just really, really hope and pray that we continue to find those things that just amaze our clients, that really amplify the leaders within our organization, within our client base, to go out and do more of what makes your heart sing and less hassling with tech and marketing issues. And that's really the magic that we're selling. We want to amplify you to go out there and do what more of what makes your heart sing and less hassling with tech and marketing issues. Okay. Cause we know when you do, guys and gals, you can go out there and make your bigger difference. And that's why we exist. So go out there and make your bigger difference. Find ways to work passion, purpose, and mission into your business, and find the other episodes of our Carrot Cast to go help you do just that. If you want to hire an amazing personal assistant to 10x your productivity, we have a podcast for that. If you want to go out there and find how other real estate investors are differentiating themselves in a crowded market, we have amazing podcasts about that. Just go to carrotcast.com to visit and listen to the other episodes of the Carrot Cast. And as always, guys and gals, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. You get the episodes about 2 to 3 weeks in advance before we ever put them on our website. So if you kind of like being first and you like being one of the first ones to get things, you're going to be able to get about 2 to 3 week advance notice on iTunes when you subscribe to it versus watching on our website. All right. Either way, guys and gals, go out there and make your bigger difference, live a life of passion, and we're here for you. All right. Talk soon.